Hello and welcome to Comic Book Junkies. I'm Andrew.
And I'm Joe.
And today we got that two-piece banger for you. We're going to talk about some Moon Knight casting rumors, and we're going to get into our book of the week, The Judas Contract by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. So, Joe, it looks like out on the internet there's rumors swirling around that we finally have a casting for the Moon Knight TV series on Disney+. Rumor is that it's going to be Oscar Isaac. I've also heard a few other names floated around, some as goofy as Nick Kroll. What are your thoughts and what have you seen on this topic?
I am hoping it is Oscar Isaac. I really like that actor in general. The cool thing about Oscar Isaac is that he played roles similar to that. He's played Poe Dameron in Star Wars. He's played in one of the X-Men movies and one of my favorite movies, Ex Machina, really good sci-fi movie if you guys haven't already seen it. So I think the actor is more than capable. He plays in a lot of roles that are kind of psychological thrillers, and so I think this would be a good fit for him, so I'm hoping they do cast him for this.
Yeah, I think he's got the chops for it too. I mean, I know he's supposed to be in that Dune movie. I want to see how that turns out. I do like him as an actor. I saw him in Ex Machina. I've seen him in a few other things. His Apocalypse rendition in the X-Men movie was a little funky, but that's not his fault. That was the movie. And I pretty much enjoy him in whatever he's in. I think he'll be pretty good as Moon Knight. I'm interested to see if they are going split personalities. So maybe if they had, you know, him as Jake Lockley, Stephen Grant, like the other personalities that Moon Knight has, or see if they're going to lean into that angle or if they're going to tie that into the more supernatural angle. I'm sure they'll probably go after something like that, like a street level sort of nuts guy. But I mean, I hope I see him fighting a werewolf. That would be pretty cool, at least as like a cameo, just like to start. Like maybe we see him chucking like some crescent moon like knives at a fucking werewolf. That'd be pretty sweet. But I mean, if they just forego that and they just kind of go into the what's real, what's not, or maybe they even go more mystical and they lean into the whole Khonshu bit where, you know, he's powered by like an avatar of the moon that died in Egypt, got resurrected, all that good stuff from his origin story. I wonder how like far back they're gonna go, or if they're just gonna kind of jump into it and kind of just take it as kind of like a mental health piece along with the crime fighting and all that. But I don't really know where they're going with it. There's a few different places they could go, but it is one of my favorite characters since I've been reading comics, so I'm excited to just see whatever they're gonna do with him.
I could see them leaning on it being a street level character, kind of like Daredevil in Netflix, but I could also see them leaning on his multiple personality disorder. However, usually those pick up darker connotations. Marvel usually doesn't like to get as dark and gritty as DC, but this is one of the characters where I would actually be comfortable with them doing that, like Daredevil Netflix or even Punisher. So I'm excited to see what they do. And if they cast a dynamic actor like Oscar, I'd be very excited to watch it. It would give me a reason to actually use Disney Plus. So that's all I got on it. Anything for you?
No, you pretty much summed up everything I had to say. Why don't we get into our book of the week, Tales of the New Teen Titans, The Judas Contract. As I mentioned before, it is written by Marv Wolfman and George Perez, the classic team that pretty much brought the Teen Titans back to prominence, pretty much wrote their most, you know, well-revered run. Starts off in issue 42 of Tales of the New Teen Titans. This whole issue is pretty much kind of just getting like a day in the life of the team. If you're not already familiar, which most people were at the time of this reading, but say you're new to the books and you haven't read the storyline, we're pretty much just following the team. We have Beast Boy, we have Donna Troy, Wonder Girl, we have Tara, Robin, Cyborg, Beast Boy, Raven, Starfire, everybody that you know from like the classic team and on the TV show, the animated series that they had back in like the early 2000s, if you're familiar with that, like I was. Pretty much they're just wandering around. Tara's pretty much doing reconnaissance on them, just kind of seeing what they do, where they frequent, stuff like that, just kind of so that she can feed that information to Deathstroke the Terminator and pretty much set up this whole storyline, and it pretty much goes crazy from there.
I liked how they took their time with the characters, because a lot of comic books don't really give you a reason to be attached to the character in the first place, and so they really slowed things down and introduced Tara to the team. Thought that was pretty cool because she's not an original Teen Titans character. Kind of came in after the fact, and it was perfect timing for her to come into because Wally West was leaving the Titans. Robin is having some kind of identity crisis because he doesn't want to be second to Batman anymore. Even though he's the leader of the Teen Titans, he feels like he needs a new identity and isn't fit to be their leader of the group until he decides what his future entails. So I thought they did a really good job of giving you reasons why you should like these characters. To play off of your point, she's working as a spy, but she's teetering in the comics a little bit on being a spy, but also getting kind of attached to the Titans. Beast boy keeps taking her out on little dates, even lands a kiss on her. So I thought that was kind of cute. After everybody's doing their own thing, like you see Cyborg ice skating and everybody's kind of doing their own thing. You get a good idea of the personality of the characters. And it was good to see a lot of Donna Troy in this too, because you don't see as much of her in the animated series. And she's one of the best Teen Titan characters. She shadows Wonder Woman, obviously, but not even too often. So it was refreshing to get a book with her in it, but it just kind of sets up the stakes in this issue, kind of introduces Tara to the Teen Titans, shows how conflicted she is because of how much time she's spending with them, but also kind of why Deathstroke hates the Titans. You find out that he's got a contract through this organization called Hive, which is also a villain of the Teen Titans. And I thought it was a pretty strong first issue to lead into the Judas contract.
Yeah, and to kind of piggyback off of your point, something that's kind of lost in modern comics, at least some of the ones I read, specifically the Teen Titans, which I don't read so much anymore, are that these characters are really fleshed out. They have depth, they have character. And when you read it, you don't even need to see where the word bubbles go. You know that they have their own specific voice, which is something that a lot of writers nowadays aren't really executing on as well. Sometimes you'll be reading a book and like Moon Knight, for example, would have like the same dialogue as like, let's say Luke Cage, or, you know, even somebody as random as like Black Widow. It's like, why do they all sound the same? But from this book, you can tell just by the word bubble, they could be under a pile of rubble and you know who's talking because they have their own quirks and mannerisms and kind of like slang that they use. But I do really like that in this book, as opposed to some of the ones we've read in the past, usually it's kind of like we have a brief setup of like who's on the team and how they get assembled, but they have kind of no personality or anything outside of that. I like that this gives you some kind of like emotional stake or something to it, as you kind of mentioned. They set the plot lines very well in this. Like, they laid the lines down and it paid off in fruition at the end. But there was a ton of cool character moments specifically, which is the heart of this story, because the whole team is pretty, I guess you would say, emotional. They're all very like friendly and close and all that. And so anytime something out of the norm happens, like everybody's really hit hard with it. But I thought it was a great issue to lead in. And yeah, I mean, it really sets up the stakes. I mean, I'd also got to just point out too that at the end of this issue that we finally see Deathstroke's costume, and I don't know if everybody else has the feelings about it that I do, but the original like 80s swashbuckler costume with the chainmail and the gun, the little staff with the power staff, the shit rules. And I love that he's also got his own Alfred with Wintergreen. Deathstroke rules, and I mean, as him being my favorite character, pretty much him and Shazam are like my top two that I had to read the story like all the way through. It just kicks ass.
We've read other Wolfman Perez stories before and reviewed them for Comic Book Junkies, and this is definitely their best work. I think it really defines their creative team very well. And it's also at the end of this issue, Deathstroke's been spying through Tara that he has enough informations on the Titan where he feels like he can satisfy that contract that he has with Hive and actually go after the Titans. So Tara has to make a decision at the end of this issue whether or not she's going to keep staying friendly with the Titans or if she's going to help Slade take them down. And that starts the beginning of part two of the contract. It's a four-part series. So in the following issue, this part of the story starts off with Deathstroke breaking into Dick's window.
Whoa.
And Dick has no idea what's going on because Deathstroke's addressing him by his real name, obviously knows where his home address is, and Dick panics and jumps out the window, which would usually kill somebody because he is human. But what was cool about this scene is he uses his leather jacket to catch the end of a railing to slow his fall, and he ends up falling on like a bunch of trash cans and twisting his ankle, but he hobbles out and runs into a crowd of people, so Deathstroke has a hard time finding him. Deathstroke keeps shooting at the crowd, but he ends up escaping, so I thought that was a pretty cool way to set up issue two.
Boom, you're getting punched right in the mouth like from the get-go, and it's just all action. And then from there, it's pretty much just like Dick doing his thing, being like an amateur detective. Well, not an amateur, I mean, he learned from Batman. He's like, I'm tossed up, but he's still running around like George Kittle with like a foot sprain. He's like, you know what, fuck it, I can still handle this. Put me out there, coach. He's like, hey, I gotta go see what's up with the squad. I'm pretty sure they got tossed up, but I gotta know for sure. So he's running over there, he's trying to see like what happened, and like through his like just looking around the room, he paints a perfect picture of what actually did happen, and he figures it out, which rules. That's a sweet sequence to watch, because he goes team member by team member, sees Starfire, she's answering the door, she's like, oh, I got a present from Dick, and then boom, Dick in a box, it's actually a bomb, blows the fuck up right in her face. she gets zapped. She's tossed up. And, you know, Deathstroke comes and snatches her ass up. We see him. He's like, oh, fuck. Well, she's gone. Gotta go see if Donna's okay. He's like, where would Donna be? The fucking photography studio. Goes to the back. She got knocked out with toxic fumes when she was trying to, you know, fix up her pictures and all that. And her ass got knocked out. It's like, Deathstroke is such a good, meticulous planner that these are like superpowered beings. And he did it without them even realizing it. And I think that's badass. They had no idea that this was coming. But my favorite one before we get going here is Cyborg in the previous issue. He gets a letter from his grandparents saying that they're moving back from, I don't know, Trinidad and Tobago, wherever the fuck they were. They're over in Indonesia or I don't know. God knows. He's like, haven't seen them in 10 years, but they're talking to me like, oh, come on, Vic. We're going to see you. We're going to go out for a scoop of ice cream at the diner. Yippity-doo-dah. And he's like, what the fuck's up, dog? He's like, I haven't seen these people in forever. And then it all pays off in this issue because we see him in his apartment. He's like all sad and shit reading the letter. He sits down in his one chair in his apartment, inconspicuous chair. He sits down to read it. He gets locked in and they zap the shit out of him. And it's like, do you know the percentage chance of that actually succeeding is? And Deathstroke's like, I know his dumb ass is going to sit in that chair and I'm going to zap the fuck out of him. And he fucking does. And it's like, how do you take down all of these people? And it was hilarious. And it also just shows like how sweet he is. He's pretty much evil Batman, but with like enhanced powers. I don't think there's anything much cooler than that.
He often goes toe to toe with Batman, for those that don't know. In the new Arrow TV show, they made him a pretty big villain of that, but he actually more often associated with the Titans and Batman, and he definitely holds his own in the animated version of Flashpoint. Lex Luthor banks on him to help him out. Deathstroke's not one to take lightly, and because Robin is so confused as to how all the Titans got clapped quick, he goes back to the only place he knows, and that's the Titan Tower. Finally, there's a woman in there, and she comes out of the shadows with another guy. He's just like, okay, what's going on? They admit that that's Deathstroke's ex-wife and son, and so he's on pretty high alert, and she explains to him why Deathstroke knows so much about the Titans, whether he wants to believe it or not, and it was because of Terra. Everybody thought she was a friend, but she was actually a foe. He doesn't want to believe it at first, but everything's kind of coming full circle for Dick being a detective. That's kind of where issue 3 starts.
I don't know why he didn't buy into what she was telling him. I mean, I get it. Oh, you're Deathstroke's ex-wife and there's his kid and you're just fucking staring at me and you're in my place. That's all tossed up. But you're doing training out in the yard. Everyone's just sparring lightly, you know, like, oh, we got to get better. Terra almost murders Beast Boy and you guys all witness it. And she's literally screaming about how I'm going to kill you. But then you're like, wait, did she really mean it? It's like, no shit, she meant it. Who the hell else was going to narc on you guys? The person who says she wants to kill you? Or, you know, fucking Raven, who's been meditating for all fucking winter. Come on. So, I don't know what the hell they're thinking. Like, why are they so trusting? God damn millennials.
What I did like about Deathstroke's wife is she paints a very cool origin story for Deathstroke. So this is where you get a little background on his character, because all you've seen so far is just his costume and him trying to fulfill a contract. But kind of just like the first issue where it sets up the character development, you get to know a lot about Slade Wilson at this point. She explains to Dick that he's in the army at the age of 16 and was like immediately a war hero. And so the military keeps pushing him forward and forward and giving him more demanding roles to be the best soldier he could possibly be.
Freedom ain't free.
And he effectively does that. He becomes really close to her because she works for the military and also kind of helps train him as well.
And she's banging.
Yeah, she's banging. So he's got a good thing in the military. They escalate him to Nom. At that point, his first son is being born, the Ravager. We later get a little more information on that. But because he's so willing to do anything for the army, they ask him to take some kind of resistant truth serum. And it fucks up his whole body, bro. Worse than COVID. The medicine is designed to stimulate his like adrenaline, but it puts his body into complete shock and he becomes unresponsive. And so the doctors tell him he's never going to recover, never going to be active duty again. And although he actually is never active duty again, he does heal and become a lot stronger. So that's where he gets a his power set from. He can use his brain better and more effectively than any other human on the planet.
Yeah, like 90% also, like all at once or something like that. He's got enhanced reflexes. Dude, he's pretty much like if you put Batman on steroids and then some. I don't know how anybody's going to fuck with him, but I love that it really does give you the whole kind of progression through his character development in one issue, which is pretty nuts to do. He had good intentions. He joined the military, you know, to serve his country, get a Dodge Charger with a signing bonus, and then he
but we see get married immediately.
Yeah, have a kid, pregnant. Get divorced, you know, the fucking life cycle. But you know what? What he did was noble. I respect it. And you know, everything leads its course. Shit happens. He gets kicked out because he tried to help his country too much. He gets tossed up by his own government.
Gives him depression. Ends up having a second child over it. But what I like that he does with this time, instead of being active military because they keep refusing him, is that he participates in a safari in Africa and becomes a hunter. And that's kind of his alibi. But low-key, the dude's dressing up in a costume and beating the shit out of people.
Yeah, dude. He's out there hunting dictators and shit. He ain't shooting elephants. He's shooting like Gaddafi and Kim Jong-un. He don't give a damn, bro. He's like, you got money? I'm about to clap it up. I think he was hunting out there, though, too. He was just shooting anything that had a pulse, dude. He didn't give a damn. His money. He says, money or not, I'm shooting it.
Cold-blooded killer, dude. And it's at this point that his wife is just like, is he really going on this many safari hunts? And it's when somebody breaks into his house and steals his second child that she realizes that he's doing more than just these safari hunts.
You don't say.
And yeah, he comes clean. He's just like, yeah, I'm actually a terrorist. And I'm hired as a missionary to kill very powerful people. And that's what I've been doing. And that's why I've become so successful since I've been out of the military. Basically, we need to go get our son. And so the two go together. All they want is intel as to who is hiring for these missions. They got his son right there with a knife to his throat. And he's just like, fuck you. And so they slit his son's throat or come close to it, put him in some kind of shock. He's able to save his son's life, but he's permanently damaged for the rest of his life. His vocal cords are completely strung, and he cannot talk ever again. And so his son goes completely mute. His wife divorces him, and he pursues being Deathstroke for the rest of his career. So it kind of shows that he has more faith and more love and care and compassion for his mission and his service than he does his own family.
Yeah, dude, how ballsy is that, though? Where he's just like, they have his one son at knife point, and he says, my word is my bond, which directly translate to suck my ass, I'm getting money. And he's just right? So cocky that he's like, I can handle it. And he's just a half second too slow, and that's ultimately what does it in. Adeline's like, why the fuck did you do that? She's like, just tell him, dude. She's like, you know, you have other bosses, you only have one son. He's like, no, that's bad for business. Yeah, I mean, after that, she obviously can't forgive him. He was less stressed about it than his wife. For whatever reason, he didn't really feel that much remorse. He's like, let's just get the kid to the hospital. He didn't come in to check on him or anything, apparently, according to Adeline. He just like took the kid there, and he's like, ah, they'll take care of him. But it's just like, what are you doing? He's going to tell her. He's like, well, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna go hunt again. Hunt people. And she's in there and she's like, no, you're not. You see, she's got a gun pulled on him, and you're like, oh shit. But he's got such enhanced reflexes that he dodged just enough to not get his brains blown out, but instead it blows out his eye, which is why he has that eye covered for the rest of his career. But because he has, you know, enhanced healing reflexes and all of that, it doesn't kill him. But I mean, he can't just regenerate an eyeball out of nothing, bro. So I mean, that's why he's stuck like that. But also it leads a little bit more to the credence of why he's so badass, because he openly covers half of his face. He only has one eye. He lets you know that when he's hunting you. You don't expect to be hunted by anybody, and if you do, not the guy with one eye who's better than anybody. So it's just like, he's just so confident in what he can do. It's not even cocky, because he can back it up. I just love how they built him up, even though you're not really supposed to like Deathstroke. I think his moral ambiguity is pretty badass, and I respect it.
He is not a snitch.
Hell no, dude.
He's willing to risk his own son's life over that. Definitely fits the personality of a mercenary. Which leads us to our very last part in the Judas Contract, which is actually an annual that came out after these three issues. That's where you find out that all of the Titans are are captured. Deathstroke's in contact with Hive, tells him that their contract is done and over, and they're like, well, you didn't get Wally West and you didn't get Robin, so it's not actually done. And he's like, well, technically Wally West quit, so that's not my business, but I will get you Robin. But Robin comes right to them.
Disco Nightwing.
Yeah, this is the part where you get his little origin of Nightwing too.
Dude.
So he ends up believing the ex-wife. He pairs with her son and they go to the mountains to go take over Hive, save the rest of the Titans, and defeat Deathstroke, which is a pretty hard task. But because that Slade's kid, even though he's mute, you find out that he's a mutant and has powers of his own. Between him and Robin becoming Nightwing in the disco suit, that's actually enough to get them to where they need to go.
I didn't know that Super Jizz, like, getting into a woman would make superpowered kids. That was interesting, because why didn't Grant have superpowers, but Joseph did? So that is a weird thing. Maybe he only had some superpowered loads after the fact. But anyways, I don't know. I do love that they roll up to Hive headquarters, which is in some fucking mountain somewhere, and they're like, this isn't the local McDonald's. It's like, oh, dude, don't tempt me with a good time. It might be. But I love that pretty much too, is like what you said. Like, they're like, no, you didn't fulfill the contract. And he's like, yeah, I did. I wouldn't tell him that he didn't do shit, because you're just some dudes in robes. He'll kill you. I don't know where they grew their balls from. But I also love the little background story where Wintergreen and Adeline are just kind of sitting, chilling, and talking. And Wintergreen pretty much goes through and recounts how he saved Slade back in the day. It's kind of a flashback to, you know, when they said they wouldn't let him go on active deployment in the previous issue. Slade returns the favor from that phone call where they're like, please let me enlist. And they're like, no. Well, he returns the favor anyways by going all the way to Vietnam. I don't know how he got over there during, like, wartime. Puts on his suit, where he has both eyes, by the way, which is cool. I like that little tidbit there, is that he did originally have both eyes cut out. Comes over and kills 38 Viet Cong in like 2 minutes, saves Wintergreen, and Adeline's like, I don't think I ever loved him as much as you do, Wintergreen. And Wintergreen does, because he's a real ass dude and he's a bro, and bros got each other's backs. Bros before hoes. Ain't that right, Wintergreen?
That's right.
Yeah, dude, it's like us, Beavis and Butthead. It's like, yeah, dude, I'm flying to Viet Cong too. Gonna get your ass out of there. But it's wild. Jericho, I like how his powers are kind of unique, since he can't talk or really do much of anything else, since he's kind of like a frail little twink of a man. He just can body snatch people, though, which is pretty useful and badass, especially in this context. Nightwing and Jericho, just the two of them taking on a whole mountain fortress full of dudes in robes, pretty badass, because all he needs to do is just make eye contact with anybody and he can just take over their whole consciousness, and that's pretty spooky.
I like their code too. Nightwing says, throw up the letter J with your hands, just so I know it's you. And they're able to take out some goonies, steal their costumes, and actually like take out like a whole room full of Hive people, until actually Tara comes to break that shit up. And she beats Robin up within like total of 10 seconds, takes him right to Deathstroke, and she's like, here's the rest of your contract. At that point, we also find why he inherited the contract. He's got the two kids, Grant, who hasn't been introduced to the story, and Joseph. You find out that the Titans have fought Grant before. And
Issue 2.
I believe he passed away. This was the contract he made with Hive, so they would give him powers as long as he can take out all the Titans. His father inherited that contract. He's just trying to make do on his son's part. But when he goes to see that Robin's finally captured, he sees that his second son, Joseph, is also captured. And so this is kind of the slip up that he has, because he was not expecting Tara to get Robin for him, nor was he expecting his second son to be there, that he's already kind of screwed over. That was kind of like a moment of clarity, but also an opportunity for the Titans to break free.
Pretty much from there, I mean, Joseph and Slade are kind of tussling it out, which both of them sad, obviously. I mean, you don't want to fight your dad in a mountain fortress somewhere. But during this whole time, Tara starts feeling betrayed and goes crazy because she doesn't have the mental wherewithal to understand the context of why they're fighting. And she starts going nuts. She feels betrayed. She's already fighting the Titans and trying to whoop their ass. And now she's turning her attention to Slade. And Slade's telling Joseph, because Joseph's in control of his body, he's like, can you just fucking let go of my body real quick so I can save myself? I love that too, because he's like, look, I can reason with this kid. Do you want me to die because of you? No matter what, he's always manipulative and he's in control. But Joseph lets go. Slade's like, look, I'm the only one who can stop her crazy ass. They try their best, but really nobody can. It's really just her overexerting herself, trying to kill everybody in the mountain fortress that really does her in, which I think is a fitting end, honestly, because she's not a hero. She's not a villain. I don't really know how she continues past this. I think it would take away from the impact of the story should she honestly survive this. You know, her going crazy, Beast Boy's dumbass is always like, I knew you were with us. Let's go get him. And she literally tells him in the middle of that, you're a stupid idiot. I hate you too. And it's like, Beast Boy is so blinded by either his dong or love or whatever it is that he can't see that this is obviously a crazy broad who wants everybody dead. Pretty clear to everybody else, I would imagine. That pretty much leads towards the end of the story. Before we wrap up on that part, I do have one other funny thing too. I don't know why it made me laugh so much, but when Slade's fighting all the Teen Titans, Cyborg's got him like pinned down or something, and Slade just cuts his arm off and calls him robot. I just started cracking up. I was like, that's so disrespectful.
Rude as hell.
It's just stupid shit like that always cracks me up with Deathstroke, because I mean, he's a real ass dude in every sense of the word, but he's not above little quips and digs at everybody while he's beating your ass. And I love that. It's like if there was like a dickhead Spider-Man in a way. It's because he's always like, fuck you, dude, you suck. And then he'll just like stab you. And then it's like, what? It's hilarious.
No, definitely one of the better villains. Tara was kind of her own undoing, because she's so mad at Slade because she wants a sexual relationship with him, even though she's 16 and he's what, in his 50s?
Old 60s. Enough, dude.
Old enough, yeah. And he's just like, you know, I'm really just trying to satisfy a contract and you just so happen to help me. He's just like, ah, I'm not feeling their relationship. And she goes nuts, dude. Frees up the Titans. The whole building is just coming undone. It's collapsing. Ends up collapsing so bad that the Titans were able to escape, but she buries herself. That's kind of the death of Tara.
Slade's like, look, I satisfy contracts, not women. And she can't handle that. And I'm just like, mood. But yeah, dude, that's like pretty much how it ends. He pretty much says that to her. She gets pissed. She dies. And then, you know, there's a hero's funeral.
I did like that funeral at the very end.
No, dude, I hate it.
You hated it?
Yeah, fuck that bitch. She tried to kill everybody, and they're acting like she just got flown over from overseas from like being in active duty, and they're like, oh my god, how could we have possibly prevented this? It's like, bitch, what? She did this to everybody. She caused the entire issue. This storyline doesn't happen if she wasn't a bitch. And then all of a sudden we're like, wow, she was a hero. She was a Teen Titan for life, and she always will be, even in death. Even though clearly she was trying to seduce gray pube dongs and kill everybody on the squad, she was a good person. It's like, no. I mean, I get like posturing for Geo-Force because he flies over from like fictional Russia or wherever the hell, Markovia or something, and his ass flies all the way over there, and he's like, oh wow, we really loved her and we hope she loved us too. It's like, I guarantee she didn't.
Well, they did it all for Geo-Force. The Titans felt like it was easier to tell her brother that she wasn't batshit crazy and that she actually was a Titan. And I think it helped with Beast Boy's mental health, even though he's kind of simping the whole time.
Simp daddy.
They gave her a proper funeral and had everybody remember her as a Titan, just as they did, because it was only the members of the organization, that tight-knit group, that knew she was actually a spy and evil. Not everybody else. So they felt like it was easier to explain it that way than just to tell everybody that she was absolutely crap. So it helps with the team morale. It helps explain to her family that they were going to have a proper funeral for her, even by putting Teen Titan on the gravestone. Definitely one hell of a way to end this series. If I had to do an overview, Wolfman did a great job giving each character their own voice. Plot was very fast-paced, which I really liked. The art was spectacular. Perez always does a great job in regards to that. Almost too much attention to detail, so take each page slow if you do read this series, as opposed to skimming through it. And I also like that Tara was a lot more mature than this in the animated series, because in the animated TV series that we watched growing up, she was a little more timid, a little more shy, confused. But in this series, she felt a little more confident, a little more sarcastic. She was even smoking cigarettes. And so she was trying to be a lot older than she actually was. And I kind of liked that quality of her character versus the way they portrayed her in the animated series.
Puffing darts and banging old farts.
Other than that, though, I liked how they portrayed Brother Blood and Hive. I liked the origin story they gave Deathstroke, the origin story that they gave Nightwing, the introduction of Jericho, which is Joseph, Deathstroke's son. So overall, this was one hell of a read.
I pretty much am in lockstep with you there. I agree on everything, and I don't know what more I can say that I haven't already. If you like Deathstroke, if you like the new Teen Titans, or if you just like a good comic book story, I would highly advise that you read it. You know what? Let's just jump into ratings. I'm going to go ahead and give it a 9 out of 10, and that's maybe a little biased because I'm pretty familiar with the story, but really tit for tat reading every single issue of it. It's a banger all the way through. I love the story. I love how they wrote the story, and the art's fantastic. It's kind of like a throwback to one of my favorite times in comics outside of the Silver Age. It's an all-time run. I would definitely give it 9 out of 10, and I would highly recommend. What do you say?
I would also give it a 9 out of 10. There's a lot of background for this story too, which I liked. A lot of fans felt like they were ripping off the X-Men with this series because X-Men recently introduced Kitty Pryde to the X-Men under Chris Claremont's run. And so this was kind of meant to mimic that in a sense, but take it a completely different direction. Wolfman added his own twist, which made the story stand out a lot more than Claremont's run on the X-Men. Not to say that that wasn't significant in its own right, but the way he compared Tara to Kitty Pryde but also made her evil at the end, I thought was a very good form of storytelling. So there was that little bit of it that I really liked, and I would agree with you. I think a solid 9 out of 10 is a good rating for this issue.
Absolutely. With all that being said, let's wrap up a little bit of bookkeeping and preface what we're going to do on next time's show. But to start, make sure you guys check us out on all social media. You can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at CBJPod. You can catch us on Facebook at CBJPodcast. You can also search us in YouTube by the same keywords there. If you really like the show, please rate and subscribe, download, do what you can, spread the word. If you do genuinely enjoy it, we would really appreciate it. And that goes for any other podcast that you listen to. Anybody would greatly appreciate spreading the word any way you can if you do enjoy it. Other than that, what are we getting into next time, Joe?
We've done all trade reviews since we started this podcast, so we want to branch out and do something a little different this time. I got a buddy, Socrates Montero. He's going to be moving out of town, and so we want to bring him on the cast and kind of explain the difference between comic books, anime, maybe the culture, differences in storytelling, kind of take a deep dive into that and compare the two and kind of see where you guys stand on it and see how we feel about the difference between those two mediums. So that's what we'll be doing next episode. We're going to have our very first guest on the show. I hope you guys enjoy the way that we try something different.
We appreciate your listening and have a good one.